What was the significance of the tortoise on the beach? Where did the water in the temple come from? And does every question lead to another question? We'll have all that and more in today's official Lost audio podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the official Lost audio podcast. We're here today with executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse for what is, for all intents and purposes, our last podcast before the finale. And ever, possibly. I say possibly because, well, you never know. In any case, they are here to rehash Across the Sea, a very polarizing and divisive episode, and prehash what they died for. More importantly, they will take some of your fan questions. So without further ado, here's Damon and Carlton.
Hello, Damon.
Hi, Carlton.
It's kind of melancholy in here today, isn't it? Sad.
It is.
Wistful.
It's our last podcast. Our pod last.
Our last podcast for Lost. I guess there must be a last one. That's part of the journey, isn't it?
There has to be. I did just receive some good news, however, which is the podcast is going to be 2.5 hours long. So you better, if you have to go to the restroom, you better get to it.
Push pause right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's time for a full and complete retrospective of the entire series.
We're going to be fielding questions starting with episode 101.
So I guess we better just dive in. And I think that as the podcast goes on, perhaps we can talk a little bit about some of the things that we've been doing over the course of the last week, you know, that have been incredibly emotionally awesome on every level, like going to the scoring stage.
That was perhaps the most emotional moment of the entire journey. I mean, it was really incredible because, you know, to sort of see the scenes that we wrote for the finale finished with Michael Cicchino's beautiful score was so powerful and evocative. And I think, you know, both Damon and I were sitting there kind of with all these memories of the past 6 seasons sort of flashing before us as we listened to his music and watched the end of the series. And, you know, we were so blessed that, in fact, that we're actually at this point that we're getting to even have this podcast. You know, most people in television, they don't even know when their shows end. They basically do a last episode and then they wait around for the network executive to decide, are you picking my show up? Are you not picking my show up? And most of the times when they decide not to, you haven't even had a chance to sort of finish it or in any proper way say goodbye to the people that you've worked with on the show.
So when we set an end date for the show, we didn't even realize that we were also canceling the podcast.
We could still continue to do the podcast.
Just about something different.
Yes, exactly.
I wonder if anybody would listen.
We could do like an Iron Man podcast, a Hulk podcast.
Or just about fishing in general.
Fishing. Well, we could kind of change it up every week. You know, we could do a nutrition podcast.
That sounds great because you and I are big on nutrition.
That's right.
But people want to talk
about Lost. They really don't
probably
want to hear us talk about anything other than Lost.
So this episode that just aired this week is called Across the Sea, and boy, Carlton, what a reaction, huh?
Well, you know, if we couldn't bring back the polar bear, we could bring back the polarizing.
Yes, we could indeed. There is definitely a North Pole and a South Pole in reactions to this episode. It's very rare. You know, people always ask us, you know, are you ever surprised by the fan reaction to an episode? And this is definitely
one of the cases where we were.
Yes, because we liked the episode. We thought it was cool. We understood it was necessary. It's obviously part of the larger plan. We thought that Alice and Janney's performance was incredible, as were Titus and Mark Pellegrino's, Titus Welliver, of course. And so we dug the episode. But what we were not expecting was the broad spectrum ranging from, I loved this episode, this is one of the most amazing episodes ever, all the way down to,
this episode
was so bad, you actually ruined
the entire
series in hindsight.
18 hours preceding it, or 19 hours, whatever it is.
I actually thought we were beyond the, you can ruin the entire series for us until we got to the finale, but it actually is kind of great that we were able to ruin it. We were able to spare that person
lower
the next 3 hours of their lives. Yeah.
You know, I honestly think that it's hard to say what the percentage of people in each camp is, but certainly the people who didn't like it are very vociferous. But we stand by the episode. We like the episode. And I think the other thing is we've always tried to be bold in our storytelling choices. And in, when you're bold, sometimes, you know, you're going to miss. And for some people, I mean, I think some people really, really love the episode. We liked it. But the placement of the episode so close to the end was also a little bit nerve-wracking for people, which was, hey, wait, there's 3.5 hours of the show left after this. And you're giving us an episode where we don't see any of our main characters until the very end, and then we're just seeing a scene from them that took place in the first season of the show. You know, we didn't want to hammer the audience over the head and say, oh, here are the skeletons. We wanted to say, oh my gosh, when they discovered the skeletons, they knew nothing about this place. And it sort of showed you what the journey of 6 seasons and 120-odd hours of the show has been.
And we wanted to connect it. We wanted to say that This woman's bad parenting created 2 sons whose behavior resulted in the crash of Oceanic 815. And in the case of Jacob, he directly started watching these people from a very, very early age. So this story had a direct impact on the story that we decided to tell, which is started with the crash of the plane. And I think another thing about this episode that you have said, Carlton, in reference to it is this is what answers look like. Right. The show. And we've talked about the whole midichlorian thing before on this podcast and other places, but it's been kind of pointed out that maybe we've been misusing the midichlorian metaphor somewhat, because nobody ever asked for the Force to be explained, you know, and people are asking for us to resolve mysteries. But the way that we use the midichlorians is it's the TMI, too much information. It's like suddenly you're answering a question that people don't want you to be answering. And this episode flirts with that idea. If you were cool with Cork, then you didn't need to see across the sea.
Right.
If you weren't cool with Cork, then you needed a further explanation as to exactly what it is about this island that needs to be protected. We went one step further. Maybe we're going to go a couple steps further still. But if you were cool with Cork, you were probably like, really? Light in a cave?
There seems to be some percentage of fans who think that it's possible to sort of kind of hermetically seal this idea of questions. But as Mother says in this episode, every question that I answer will just lead to another question. That is a very purposeful statement on her part. And we kind of view looking at the island
almost as if one of us wrote it.
Almost
as if Mother is not a real person at all.
Almost.
Yeah.
But, you know, our analogy was like the Big Bang Theory, you know, when we were discussing, if we're going to show something in island history, what's
the show?
I'm talking about the sort of theoretical physics construct.
I do like that show, though.
And the idea that if we're going to tell island history, it should be relevant to our show. So it was relevant to understand, in our view, the origins of the Man in Black and Jacob. It was also relevant to establish the heart of the island. That's an important piece of information that you need going into the finale. But it wasn't important for us, or it felt like we would never be able to sort of satisfy the answers of, you know, what is the full and complete history of all the people who were on this island over the entire span of time. It's the Big Bang Theory metaphor, which I'm getting to, is this. If I were to say to you, Damon, what's the earliest event in the universe? You would say to me,
dinosaurs.
You might say, well, the Big Bang Theory. That's, you know, when the origin
was that
of the universe
dinosaurs?
Commenced. There was, yes. Okay. So then I might say to you, Damon, well, what was before the Big Bang Theory?
Dinosaurs.
Okay, see, so, and then I'd say, well, what was before the dinosaurs?
Oh, that's a good question. Dinosaur eggs.
And what was before the dinosaur eggs?
Dinosaur sex to make the eggs.
And it just goes on and on, doesn't it? Because then you'd be, say, like, you know, they'd be like,
oh, right.
E-Harmony dinosaur.
Yeah. There's always a question in the wake of a question.
There's always a question in the wake of a question. So that is an unsolvable problem for people who are obsessed with questions.
Something tells me that some of the questions that we have for each other that the fans have submitted will put us in conversations about some of the plot points on this episode. But we also, anticipating that this episode was going to be, people were going to kind of want to hear what we had to say about it, we did just do an audio commentary for the DVD. So if you're really interested in why we made a lot of the decisions we made in Across the Sea, we talk at length, some might say ad nauseum, about it.
Yes.
In that episode.
You know, we're down to really the very end of our journey here. I mean, we are having our Lost Live event tonight, where a small audience will see the last episode of Lost before the finale, and then a week from Sunday, the finale airs. After that, apparently, Jimmy Kimmel is showing 3 alternate endings to Lost.
Apparently, that were conceived by you and I. So people are wondering, you know,
did they really write four endings to the show?
And then they just picked the one that they like best?
That seems pretty lame.
Well, I think we can say this. We don't want to ruin the surprise of whatever Jimmy has to offer, because I'm sure it's fantastic. That being said, Carlton and I can confirm here we only wrote one ending of the series, and we only shot one ending of the series. So if you're hearing about alternate endings of the series, you should take them in the tone in which they are offered.
But I bet they're going to be fun.
Yeah, they could be funny.
They could be very funny. As a matter of fact, it was one of the funnest things that I've ever done was working with Jimmy on those alternate endings of Lost.
That's true. So we will actually be appearing in that special on Sunday night, just not live.
Correct.
Perhaps
exactly.
In one of these alternate endings.
But hopefully you will tune in and watch them because they are very good.
I just want to ask one question before we sort of dive into the other questions. Is there going to be a surprise ending at the end of this finale podcast? Is something going to happen where I'm like, oh my God, every podcast that I've been listening to prior to this one, I now have to go re-listen to. It's an entirely different context.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Good. So keep listening.
Good.
One of us will die at the end of this podcast. That's all we're really.
And by us, we mean Chris White.
Yes, exactly. not including Damon Carlton.
Should we get to some questions, Damon?
We're not really going to prehash what they died for, other than to say the characters that you know and love. One of the reasons we did Across the Sea at the time we did is because we're sort of done with the
mythology downloads.
And now it's all about what happens to the characters. And everyone that you know and love is going to feature very prominently in the next 3.5 hours of the show. One thing just about mothers worth mentioning.
Yes.
The show has really talked a lot about father issues, bad dads, fathers being responsible for their kids growing up the way they did in the case of Jack and Sawyer and Kate and Hurley and Charlie, all of them. Some bad dads very rarely talk about their mothers. This time, we're basically saying that the person who's responsible for this whole mess is a woman, is a mother, bad parenting, and that she lies, she's deceitful, she's manipulative.
She's
caring about where she hits you in the head with a rock.
Yeah.
You know, she does a lot of rock bludgeoning.
Yeah, that is true.
And one of the original joke titles for this episode, because we are getting to that scene where she brings Jacob to the light and she forces him to drink and become the new protector of the island, was, "I'll just sit here in the dark," which is an old joke amongst us Jews about how many Jewish kids does it take to change a light bulb? Forget it, I'll just sit here in the dark.
Got it.
Right. So that was the original joke title there as well.
But we love our mothers.
We do.
And so we really have avoided taking on mothers in the show.
We are just really don't want them to hit us with rocks.
Never would happen.
Fearful. All so right. Carlton, the final batch of podcast questions.
Well, I'm excited and sad at the same time.
They better be good.
Okay.
Do you want to start?
I'd love to start. Hello, I am Mark Caldwell from Knoxville, Tennessee. Greetings, Cardam. There's been some debate among my friends since The Candidate aired as to what John Locke is actually mumbling when he sees him unconscious. My friends insist that the first thing he mutters is boon. However, it is my belief that he actually says prunes, because as you may know, those pain meds can really bind you up. Any thoughts on this?
Wow, that's a good question. I think he's mumbling button, you know. I think he's saying button.
Button.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
button.
The word.
That's the word he's saying.
But.
And so he's obviously, so Locke is kind of like having a dream about his existence in the island world.
Yeah.
While he's in the sideways world.
It is interesting, Carlton.
That's is that an Easter egg?
It could be.
Sounds
could,
like an Easter omelet.
Could be. This is a question that I have a feeling that a lot of people have.
Okay.
And I'm ready, and we discussed it a little bit on the commentary, but why wait? This question is from Paula Sato. My loved Damon and Carlton. Here is Paula from Sao Paulo, Brazil. I love to learn more about Jacob and his twin brother, but there's one thing about this episode that made me uneasy. If their false mother made so that they cannot hurt each other, and that's the origin of the rule, how could Jacob kill his brother? Or what happened is that he wasn't killed, like his body's gone, but he turned into the black smoke, so he's still alive in some other way? Please answer my question, or I won't be able to sleep anymore. I'm so sad that Lost finale is so close. Gonna miss the show and most of all this podcast. Love and kisses, Paula
Sato. Well, Paolo, here's the thing. He didn't hurt him directly, and this is sort of an important distinction on the show. I mean, obviously, we saw Locke caused enormous tragedy for our castaways by basically manipulating a situation. He's responsible for the bomb that was on the submarine, but did he directly detonate the bomb? No. Sawyer is perhaps responsible for detonating the bomb. He was responsible for the bomb.
Well, you're saying Jack is right? If Sawyer hadn't pulled those wires out, nothing would have happened?
Well, my theory is that Sawyer was right.
It's an interesting theory, which leads us into the whole conversation about rules and whether or not...
That's right.
Yeah.
But certainly, there's a difference between direct action and indirect action, and I think that by Jacob knocking the man in black out and sending him down into the down the waterfall, that was sort of an indirect action. He was not really aware of what was going to occur after that. He was like, you want to see the light? Go see the light. And I think he's just as surprised as the next guy to see a giant smoke monster come freight training out of the cavern.
Yeah, definitely. Who is that next guy who was also surprised? That's what I want to know. Yeah, and it also brings up this interesting issue of rules, which is all these rules govern our characters. Widmore and Ben refer to rules about not being able to kill each other's daughters, or, you know, the man in black and Jacob refer to these rules about not being able to kill candidates or leave the island unless all the candidates are dead. But what's very cool, and obviously in Across the Sea, the two boys are playing this game, and Jacob is not wanting to abide by the boy in black's rules, and the boy in black responds by saying, well, maybe one of these days you can make up your own rules, and everyone will have to abide by them. So a couple of interesting things to be paying attention to as far as what the show is trying to say.
So I'm going to actually fire off sort of a related question to that, which is kind of a little specific. It kind of is a good segue question. Are you ready?
Yeah, like the thing that you write around on?
To whom it may concern, from Jonathan Adam Steinman. Gee, Jonathan, who could that be? There's Damon, there's me, there's Chris White. You know, what do you want? You've got one of us here, okay?
Notice his use of whom.
Whom, yes, he says, didn't say to who it may concern.
Right.
Thank you. Well done.
We now know that
well
this guy
done.
Is a jerk.
No.
Based on my previous
theory.
He's
a
theory.
Student.
Okay.
Jerk. In this week's episode of Across the Sea, it is revealed that Jacob and the man in black are twins. In the pilot episode of the series, we see Gary Troop, author of the novel Bad Twin, killed after a nearby jet engine exploded. Upon a closer look, a small amount of black smoke can be seen entering said jet engine moments before it explodes. My question is, did the man in black, upon hearing about Troop's novel, intentionally murder poor Gary? If so, why? Was he self-conscious about being labeled as bad? It's been a great run, and I appreciate all your efforts in making such a visionary show. Thanks, John S. from New York. P.S. Last week I had a chemistry final. I guess he is a student.
Yeah.
The first question asked, what is Faraday's constant? I wrote Desmond Hume. I haven't gotten my grade back.
All right. First off, you are not a jerk. You can use whom whenever you want. That is awesome. And if your teacher actually appreciates that joke and you get some sort of extra credit for it, they are our official hero. As for the question itself, I think it's safe to say that the smoke monster didn't really get to read Bad Twin until later in the season, so probably was not directly responsible for Gary's death, but probably would have killed him had he not already been sucked into the jet engine.
Okay.
Dear Damon and Carlton, they put an E in your name, see?
Oh, Carlton. That sucks. It's There's like no E in Carlton.
That should be the title of your autobiography. There's no E in Carlton.
That's true.
And then there'll be an E in your, with it crossed out.
Yeah.
I have never had one of my questions read over the podcast.
You have now.
Guess what? This is the time to have it read, the last podcast, and I've been submitting them since the beginning of Lost. I would like to let you know that my high school senior prom is on, hold your breath, Carlton, May 23rd.
Who
on
a
Sunday
a prom
night.
On a Sunday night.
I am missing my prom to watch the finale of your show and have almost lost a longtime girlfriend over it. If that is not loyalty that deserves my question to be read on the podcast, I do not know what is.
That's true.
My question is if the water that was in the pool inside the temple that could supposedly heal wounds is the same water or substance that is in the river Cave of Light that Jacob is protecting. Thanks very much for 6 years of the best television show ever made. From Jackson Watson, Tacoma, Washington, not going to his prom, Carlton, well, because of you.
You know what?
And your E.
I think that I'm just going to say, Jackson, that if your school's having their prom on a Sunday, you're far better off staying home and watching Lost, okay? I mean, why on a Sunday? I mean, what's up with that? I mean, where is he in Tacoma?
Tacoma, Washington.
Oh, gosh.
Answer the question.
You know what the problem with Tacoma is? It's not in Canada.
Wow.
Here's what I'm going to say about this.
International incident. We should press some t-shirts, though, that on the front it says, you know what the problem with Tacoma is?
It's not in Canada.
And on the back it says, it's not in Canada.
That's true.
And we should sell them.
Okay.
To Canadians.
Sorry.
Water.
Pool. Water. Here's,
yeah, we've talked about water before as being important in the finale.
Yes, and you know, I think it's a very good inference to sort of connect the water metaphors across various scenes in the show. In Across the Sea, the Man in Black says some very interesting things about how he's down there. We see what looks like the donkey wheel that Ben and Locke's up, you know, turned at a later time in the linear narrative of the show. We hear him say, we're building a system to harness the light and the water. That's an interesting connection as well. Perhaps the heart of the island, the heart as a metaphor for a body, a circulatory system. There's, I think, a lot of deductions that one might be able to make.
And the water could be seen as the lifeblood of the island itself, Carlton?
It could be.
All righty. Well, this is all very interesting.
Dear Darlton, this is from Nick Galley. What was up with that tortoise on the beach? I have a feeling that the tortoise is the key to Lost. Is this perhaps a special incarnation of Vincent? Previous incarnation of Vincent. Is he some sort of supernatural animal protector of special children? If so, what form will he be taking next? I would like to suggest a koala bear because they're cute yet especially ferocious. Anyway, don't let the haters get you down. This episode was awesome. And adding C.J. Craig to the mix made it even awesomer. Thanks, Nick, from California.
That would be Allison Janney who played C.J. Craig, right?
Right.
Well, Nick, one thing that's worth interesting mentioning about this question is that Stephen King often uses turtles and tortoises as forces of light and goodness in his writing, particularly It in the Dark Tower series, of which we are both humongous fans. So perhaps, maybe... the tortoise is there for a little bit of a rabbit with a number 8 on its back. Carlton, wink, wink, Mr. King.
Correct. But we also, I would say we also got lucky, Nick, because the truth is, in the state of Hawaii, those tortoises are highly protected species, and you are not allowed to get anywhere near them, touch them, manipulate them. Tucker Gates, who directed that episode, was incredibly fortunate that a tortoise happened to be sunning on the beach, right where he was planning to do his shot. That tortoise...
Right.
Rolled up, took a position, and basically made itself comfortable there. Now, are there greater forces at work that are telling us that the tortoise should be a significant mythological figure in Lost? Perhaps. We don't know.
It's not our place to say.
That's a question that baffles even us.
Carlton?
Yes?
I've got a question. I'm not sure it's legit, and I'm going to read it exactly the way it was written. I am a little bit cynical based on the grammar, but I'm going to read it exactly as it was written. This is Zednanre Yoram Samej, and I have much simple inquiry, as writers are only capable of answering such questions. Last show, Across the Sea, implies that drawstring was technology available in about 450 BC. Is not such case. Drawstring is invented near Middle Ages. This, of course, ruined show for Zednanre Yoram Samej. Must now retreat to mountains of Kazakhstan to find inner peace. How could you have made such a critical mistake is almost as bad as not recognizing Klein-Kaluza particle. And if you know what that means, I sure don't. So, Carlton, what do you have to say to Zednanre Samej? Drawstring, though, seriously?
Wow. That
seems
first
like
of
a pretty
all,
big gaffe.
No, I think the gaffe is his assumption that the story is taking place in 450 BC.
Right, so when was the drawstring invented?
Well, I'm just saying that, first of all, I don't believe it. I want some proof that there's someone calling right now to disavow the drawstring
theory.
It's
just in.
Drawstring invented how did people hold their clothes up, you know, before that?
Suspenders.
I dispute that. I dispute the 450 BC. I dispute the particle,
yeah.
And I dispute that this man even has television.
I think what's really great is you watch that episode and you go, yeah, knives flying into wells, glowing light particle beams being turned into smoke. Yeah, I'm on board.
People being
drawstrings.
People being anointed protectors of the island.
I cry foul, sir. Drawstrings weren't invented until 450 BC. Now, you know, electrical donkey wheels. Now, that is, of course. All right. That's the only way I know how to ask that question. So okay. Thank you for answering it, Carlton.
Okay, the real Dan Steele.
This Dear is not the imposter Dan.
Soon not to be Darlton. Sad. Uh-huh. After watching Across the Sea, it seems that much of Lost revolves around two men on opposite sides staring at each other with hatred in their eyes. Jacob and the Man in Black, Locke and Jack.
Linus, I thought he was talking about Whitmore, you and I.
Said and himself.
Yeah.
Is it because you, Damon yes. and Carlton, secretly hate each other deep down, and is it your true rivalry and disgust for one another that has driven most of these series for these 6 years? If so, which one of you is the evil one? Thank you for the brilliant legacy of Lost. I will miss Appointment TV. The real Dan Steele.
It's a little uncomfortable to talk about now, but because it's the final podcast, it's probably best to do a little bit of a kind of evil. All right. Kind of, you would say that. A shocking revelation here in the penultimate act of what our podcast is.
We only talk to each other during the podcast.
Even more shockingly, we do not do the podcast from the same location. We are in separate locations. So
all those like conversations Kevin and Bean radio about show. All yeah. those conversations about pants, they're fictitious because we are not actually sitting 3 feet from each other on a couch. Damon is in Portugal.
That's exactly right. So is it a secret that we don't like each other? Well, not
yes,
anymore.
It was.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks, yeah. Dan.
Maybe we'll make up by the end of this podcast.
Make out.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, hey, I'm Chris. I'm going to start talking now because you can't possibly fire me. Great. Thanks for piping.
Thanks up. For all the years of good work.
Hey, DeMarlton.
DeMarlton, okay.
I've been an avid listener since this podcast's inception and hope I might finally get the chance to ask a question on this, your last official Lost podcast. I love this podcast, and it's been a lot of fun to listen to you two joke around about one another and your show. Here's the question. Of your 5 years of doing the podcast, what's your favorite podcast memory, moment? Or if that one has been asked 1,000 times, answer this one. What the hell happened to Kate's plane? Thanks so much for the insight and the laughs.
Oh, my gosh.
Justin J. from L.A.
Justin, awesome.
So, Carlton, let's just look back and reminisce.
Looking back on the podcast.
If we were not in separate locations.
I would say my favorite moment was when we fell into uncontrollable laughter, although I can't even remember why we did.
Chris, will you refresh our memory?
Do you remember?
I don't remember.
What were we laughing about that
know,
one time?
But it was funny.
I'd have to look it up because everyone loves that podcast.
I know. It's
a classic.
It was classic. And there's,
I remember it as if I didn't remember it at all.
I know. I remember the laughter, but I don't remember the memories.
It was one of those podcasts, though, where you and I were on like 4 hours of sleep. And
yeah.
We just got silly, Carlton.
I think having our mothers on the podcast and having having them compete to figure out how to woo Sawyer is an indelible memory that many years of subsequent psychotherapy still has not erased from my brain.
It's so hard to pick a favorite moment. I will say this, that Carlton has always loved doing the podcast, and I love doing it too, but I've been very curmudgeonly about it. And you always say, come, because we're always busy. It's like, yeah. Who has time to sit, you know, in the midst of the hell that is raining down on us from all sides to take an hour and do the podcast? But you say, the podcast is actually one of the best parts of the job. And you always,
it is true.
You always feel better after you've done it. And it's the only time we really talk to each other. So let's do it. And I do appreciate you forcing me to do the podcast because I do love it.
Yeah, that 1 hour a week of pretend friendship is actually really helpful to get through the rest of the other 75 hours.
For friendship,
exactly.
All right.
Anyway, you know what? I don't think we can really go out on any other note than that. That sort of nice reminiscent note. I can't really see asking you a question
yes.
about, you know, John Locke and monsters and white light and stuff. So let's just end there and say thank you all so much for being our listeners and for caring about us in the show.
And now for that shocking revelation at the end of the podcast that is going to change the way that you've looked at every podcast that preceded it. There is no Damon. Both of us are actually Carlton. And
I've actually been throwing my voice, and that I'm going to do it one more time here, and you'll really see that what it is here. Okay, so now I'm going to do my Damon voice.
I don't exist. I never have existed. I am an alter ego to blame things on. All this time, there has only been one person, me, myself, and I, kind of like Fight Club, spoiler alert.
That's right. So, in fact, Darlton, kind of a misnomer. We thank you anyway, and I really appreciate the fact that you've cared so much about me during this entire time of Lost. And you know, the creation of Damon, it's been a vital part of the entire show.
And now I will drink a glass of water while doing my Damon voice one last time. I bid you all adieu.
Farewell.
That's it for the podcast. What They Died For airs Tuesday, May 18th from 9 till 10 p.m. on ABC. And the series finale for Lost airs Sunday, May 23rd from 9 till 11:30 p.m., followed immediately by the Jimmy Kimmel special. Since this is our last audio podcast with Damon and Carlton, we thought we would leave you with the moment that Carlton was referring to, which occurred in March of 2007 when we prehashed the episode Catch 22. Here it is, Carlton's favorite podcast moment.
In Left Behind, we could see the game Mousetrap in the rec room. In Deus Ex Machina, Locke was working in the toy store, and he said that Mousetrap was his favorite game and that he used to play it with his brother. Questions. Is Locke's brother alive?
Locke's brother?
I'm just asking the question.
Locke's brother. I'll be honest with you, Carlton. I did not know that Locke had a brother. I know he had a foster brother that he's referred to. And my guess is, yes, he's probably still alive and well.
Okay, my next question.
Yeah. Well, let's have it.
Is he?
Come on, Carlton, give it up. This better be as good as...
Is he lost?
I want to know. Should I read it, Carlton?
Oh, is he somebody we already know, like Ben?
No. No, I mean, he's not. I like this.
When will we learn more about him?
Never.
Oh, my God.
I guess
I got to get some sleep.